miss you when I
Welcome back, everyone. For today, I'm actually joined with Cassandra Jane. We're going to talk about Donna Hayward. But before we get into it, I'll hand over the mic so she can introduce herself further.
Hello. It's so wonderful to be on this podcast. Thank you so much, Colin, for having me. I am so excited to talk all things Donna.
And usually I start off with these episodes where I'll discuss like something about the Twin Peaks mythos. And this will seem like a facetious question, but I do ask this in genuine seriousness. But if you had to pick between the two, do you like Maura Kelly's Donna more, or do you like Laura Flynn Boyle's Donna more?
Oh, okay. That's the eternal question, isn't it? I think that they are both absolutely wonderful. I just want to make that clear. However, I do have a slight bias towards Laura's, simply because I think we had more time with her. And I don't know, her performance to me, she had so many layers. You know, she was naive. She could also be very cunning. She could be angry. She could be so melancholic. And we really got to see all of those sides to her, good and bad. So that's why I would say Laura. But Moira is still absolutely amazing too. You know, I just want to make that absolutely clear.
As for me, I would say up until like probably a year and a half ago, I would have veered towards Maura Kelly's Donna, because I remember for a long time, I thought she was more consistent in terms of her characterization. And you're right, Laura Flynn Boyle's is more, she has more screen time. So we do see that change. But I think that as the last year and a half has progressed, I've come to the realization that I actually like them both equally. And I think it's mostly because the way that Maura Kelly's Donna is portrayed, I feel like you need to have that in order to have Laura Flynn Boyle's work. Because when I look at Maura Kelly's Donna, I know that behind the scenes, Laura Flynn Boyle, that she just obviously did not return. And then she did Wayne's World. Like, I think it was like within the few weeks before Fire Walk with Me. But I look at Maura Kelly's Donna as quote unquote Laura's Donna, because I look at the inconsistencies in Fire Walk with Me. And I think to myself like, oh, you know, why does this all look so different? And I think that in the case of Laura, trauma and memory don't go quite hand in hand. So the way she'd look at Donna would be a little bit different. And I think that's my rationale for why she does look different. But there's all these little things that we'll get to later on when we get to Fire Walk With Me. But I just thought it was important to put out there that what we see in Fire Walk With Me is how Laura views the world. And then what we see in the original series is more akin to what the real Donna is.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And, you know, that's how I really view them as well. I mean, when I answered that question, I was just thinking if I really, really had to choose. But no, I'm with you. I do think that they were both equally important and that they were the right choice for the respective portrayals, you know, during Twin Peaks and during the movie. Yeah, I think that they were just both absolutely terrific, but in different ways, perhaps.
And I guess to kind of build off of that, when you read The Secret Diary for the first time, did you think of it when Donna was in it? Did you think of it more as Maura Kelly's Donna or Laura Flynn Boyle's Donna? Because the first time I read it, I was kind of skewing back and forth, which is, you know, I feel like I could have and should have just committed one or the other. But I think that because that's also in Laura's perspective, that's why I settled on looking at Maura Kelly's Donna, even though I still think of Laura Flynn Boyle as the quote-unquote real Donna.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely understand where you're coming from. No, I think that so the first time I read it was nearly a decade ago, actually. But I do remember reading it in Laura's voice, reading Donna's lines in Laura's voice. So, yeah, she is kind of always the first Donna that I think of.
And I guess this is probably a silly way to start off, but it is one of the first scenes that we do have with Donna in Secret Diary, is that she meets Maddie around, I think it's, if it's not the day of Laura's 12th birthday, it's shortly after. It's one of those things where I feel like it should bug me more than it does. But when Maddie and Donna meet in season two, it seems like it's the first time they've ever met. Has that ever been something that bugged you just for continuity reasons? Because I know people go in completely different directions in terms of how they feel of continuity in Twin Peaks.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that the first time that I read, and I thought, that's interesting. It sort of brings the question of an unreliable narrator, perhaps, as in the case of Laura, but I don't know. I think that it was probably just an oversight that had been included. But yeah, when they met in season two, they definitely, that to me was written as a first meeting. So, and obviously, The Secret Diary was written. It was written between. No, sorry, they met in season one, didn't they?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean season two.
Yeah. I was only thinking about that because The Secret Diary came between season one and season two, didn't it? So I think that maybe that revision was probably just how Jen Lynch envisioned things, rather than maybe then trying to actually change the canon. So I think that you could probably, barring their first meeting, you could probably still have that headcanon in your mind about them having met at Laura's 12th birthday party. But I don't know. I do think that it makes more sense the way that they met in season one, absolutely.
Because, I mean, I know it's family, and of course there's a lot more that goes on with this in the second season, but you know, it's like when Maddie meets Leland in the first season, there's clearly like a past connection just because they're family, and it's hard to believe that she showed up. So yeah, I just figured it was worth mentioning just because that was like one of the first scenes we have with Donna. But admittedly, to kind of build off of the more intense aspects of The Secret Diary, Donna does, I think she says to Laura that she has quote unquote too many sad thoughts, which to me, that I always took that as, it was the newfound sexual abuse that Laura was dealing with at that time, where I feel like it was like literally right from the 12th birthday onwards. So it's like Laura is just in a very bad spot and is still trying to grasp with it. Yeah, I think that this scene sets a precedent for the rest of their scenes in The Secret Diary and why the relationship will be on and off throughout the years to come. The next one I will say is that even though they do have all this stuff that goes, they'll have these up and downs with each other. It's not in The Secret Diary, but Sarah does bring it up in season two. It's at Leland's wake, where when Laura and Donna were young, that they had this like vow that they would basically be the best of friends forever. I guess I just want to ask your thoughts about that since we're so early on in The Secret Diary.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that I find most intriguing about Donna is her relationship with Laura and the highs and the lows of it. And I do think that in so many ways, it's really realistic. You know, when you're at that age, your social dynamics are so difficult for so many reasons. And obviously what happens to Laura is horrific. And, you know, some of the more paranormal aspects are things that we thankfully don't have to deal with so much in the real world. But yeah, the way that they kind of interact with each other and the way that they're together, but they're apart at the same time. Obviously, there's so many explanations to that with what Laura's going through and her disconnect from the people around her. But I do think that fundamentally they are close and that they absolutely love each other. They would do anything for each other. I think that that was absolutely proven. I think that Donna is, in many ways, Laura's constant. You know, she stops her from succumbing, I guess, in her mind, to that monstrosity inside of her. Of course, she isn't a monster, but that's how she views herself towards the end, I think, in particular. And Donna helps her to sort of keep that humanity, you know, like in Fire Walk With Me, when Donna's going to be, like when she wears the jacket and Laura gets so upset because the thought of Donna being anything like her is just unbearable. They are definitely such an important dynamic, I think, for understanding each other's characters. You have to look at that dynamic, absolutely.
I'm glad you mentioned it in that context because, you know, everything we're talking about at this point, it's like that very innocent, best friends to the end type of friendship that you definitely see in middle school. But I think one thing that sets a precedent for, I guess, Laura's darkness from this point on is that she thinks that she can make Donna smoke just by looking at her the right way. And it kind of makes me think of that scene from Fire Walk With Me when Laura does that to Bobby right after school. And it seemed like Laura I take it more so as like a survival sort of trait, for lack of a better term. It sort of like shows that Laura is in a darker place and that she's let it out on Donna. And also, I think one thing that's worth mentioning that amplifies it is that on October 12th of 1984, they meet those older guys in the secret diary. It's actually Tim that is the one that Donna is the one that she gravitates towards. But the thing is that they meet a week later, and Donna, of all people, is the one that suggests skinny dipping. And she's just kind of talking things out with Tim, but then she's like really weirded out by seeing like Laura, which I have to stress, the first time I read this part of the secret diary, one, I was in public, and two, I had to look at the front cover. I was like, should I be reading this? It had that serious vulnerability where I felt like I shouldn't even be reading someone's thoughts on this level. Probably because of this is like their first like contentious relationship that she has with Laura, and it seems like they're very on and off. And there's actually not that much about Donna in the Secret Diary up until she starts dating Mike Nelson in 1986. And one thing I have to ask you is that what do you think Donna could have possibly seen in Mike Nelson? Because it seems like they don't even really like each other once you get to Fire Walk With Me. But I feel like even the way that Laura talks about Mike in the Secret Diary, it's like I have a hard time believing why she likes Mike.
I think in the case of Donna in particular, I think she's someone who's constantly trying to prove herself. She's constantly trying to live up to Laura. She's trying to act cooler than she actually is. And of course, that always happens with teenagers. Myself, I had dated questionable people who, I mean, I don't know what I saw in them, but I don't think I did see anything in them. I think it was just trying to be something that I wasn't. And I think that that's a huge part of Donna and definitely her relationship with Mike, because wow, I can't think of any other logical explanation.
I think the reason why I was thinking about Mike Nelson more during this time is that from this point, it's at least 2.5 or 3 years they're dating. And in the missing pieces, there's that part where when Laura goes back to Donna's house and she's like, oh, I'm thinking about doing it with Mike, where there's still this like kind of innocence of sorts. And even the realm of this being through Laura's perspective, I still think it's very telling of Donna's innocence and like how she views like these aspects of her relationship with Mike. I guess the other one I do want to mention is that I felt this way in Fire Walk With Me. And upon each time I reread The Secret Diary, I look at Ronette as basically the replacement Donna, where there's I guess the quote unquote good Laura, where she can be like that high school girl that everyone looks up to. But then there's her nightlife, where it's like the escapade she has with like Jacques Renault, Leo Johnson, the drugs that she uses. And then Ronette is basically Donna's replacement. Have you ever thought about the two of them and how they kind of compare and contrast to each other?
Yeah, that's something that actually I did think about, especially when I was watching for the first time. I did think that, Ronette was sort of after dark Donna, for lack of a better phrase. And I think that obviously they had extremely different upbringings and paths that led them to where they were at that point in the series. And I think, though, that Laura did have a genuine love and protection for both of them. But by the time that she was doing the things that she was doing with Ronette, she couldn't really, she had lost so much of that innocence, and it materialized in the way that, she wasn't perhaps as warm with Ronette as she could be with Donna. But yeah, maybe also Ronette was sort of the way that Donna could have turned out to be had things been different.
One thing that kind of adds credence to that is that I think of how near the end of the diary, I think it's around the point where it's not even dated entries, they're just all undated. But she says that she wishes that Ronette and Donna could both be friends. And I know that by that point, Laura, she said at that point that she hates how Jacoby can see the two Lauras. And so I kind of took it as like almost like a uniting, if you will, for lack of a better term, that she kind of wishes she didn't have to live these two lives, that they could just coexist in some way. Even though I think at this point she thinks that's like it's well beyond that.
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting way of looking at it. Yeah, I'm definitely inclined to agree.
The only thing I have between The Secret Diary and then Fire Walk With Me is that we have the scene with the picnic where Laura and James and Donna, they all spend that day together. And it seems like it's one of the last, like, quote unquote, truly happy days that Laura has. But I think in the context of Donna, if I had to guess, maybe this is the period where her and James would have actually kind of been starting to hit it off. And I know that people have very strong opinions about the romance between the two. Even I have a little bit of strong opinions about it. But I guess, before we move into Fire Walk With Me, because Donna does bring up James in a very positive light. Did you have any thoughts about this picnic scene and how it's so central to arguably Fire Walk With Me, but definitely the pilot?
Yeah, it is so hugely integral, I think, to all three of those characters. You have Laura. She is masking completely, trying to have a moment of normalcy, having that innocence that really she's lost, but she's kind of, I guess, she's acting it out. But I do think that, like you said, she's actually happy in that scene. And then, you have Donna and James and clearly, something is building between them, and that complicated dynamic, that the fruits of that are definitely sown right from the beginning.
In order to talk about why Donna sees so much in James, we have to go back to Mike for a moment because the technically one of the earlier scenes with Donna is that, of course, after Laura goes to her house, they're going to school. There's that part in the missing pieces where it's focusing on Mike and Bobby's predicament with Leo Johnson. But I think it's worth addressing is that Mike's relationship, it's almost like he's catcalling Donna, where it's like it's hard to believe these two have been in a relationship for 3 years because he's like, oh, you need a real man. And it's just so wildly disconnected. She's like, oh, I'm gonna walk with Laura instead. Because at least with Laura and Bobby, they do get publicly contentious after school that day, but at least they you can buy into it that there is some relationship. But with Mike and Donna, I never got that at all in The Secret Diary or in Fire Walk With Me and the original series for that matter.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. The way that Mike treats her is just that of an object. Like you say, he catcalls her. He is so demeaning and so aggressive and just awful, really, at that point. But I can understand Bobby, the appeal of Bobby, because beneath his exterior, he is charming and he is funny. And I can definitely see how that would appeal. But Mike, I don't know, there's just nothing.
And I think that's why I kind of softened up to the relationship with James and Donna because I guess it's worth mentioning is that Donna and Laura's friendship, even though it had those high highs and low lows during The Secret Diary, it seems like things are pretty good because they do go to Donna's house after school. And there's that scene where it's like it just shows that shot basically from the ceiling of them just like sitting around and they're just talking about them. But I think it's very telling that Donna, she says that she thinks James is gorgeous. And then she has to proceed with, I wonder if Mike can write a poem. Like after 3 years that he hasn't been able to prove himself during this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, like you said, her attraction to James, I do think that it's important to look at her dynamic with Mike. James is in so many ways the polar opposite, really. He's much more sensitive, he's much more gentle, he behaves like more of a gentleman. And I think that that's probably the kind of person that she has always been attracted to. But I don't know, maybe for some reason, her and James's paths have just never really crossed all that much before he started coming into the fold. That's the only thing I can think of, because if they really were in contact that much, then I don't see why she would have been with Malik.
I guess, admittedly, just because it is Fire Walk With Me, this is probably where the lightest parts will end for a while because there's actually two parts that I think that are a little bit alarming, at least from Donna's lens, because I get the sense that she didn't quite pick up on Laura's double life until this point because she's like, oh, are you going to go see James or are you going to go see Bobby? And there's the way that Laura's answering where it's like she's not going to tell her, like she's saying, like, nighttime is my time. And you can tell that there's a certain disapproval that Donna has. But I feel like that scene is dwarfed by the next one because that's when we have that scene. That's actually my favorite scene with Cheryl Lee. Certainly when I realized how great her performance is going to be, where she asks how, if you're in space, if you'd slow down or go faster. I don't think there's anything I could say about Laura's line that I could do better than Cheryl Lee did. But I will say is that the look that Donna gives her at the end, it's like it's very much like a strong concern. of course, Donna will remember that. But we have that scene where after Laura, after she runs from the Double R Diner and she finds out that Leland walks out of the Palmer home, she goes back to Donna and she asks, "Are you my best friend?" And there's a lot I can say about the missing pieces, but there's one question I want to ask you about this scene, because that shot that she uses when she's in desperation, that's the same scene Gorham Cole sees when he opens the door in The Return. Have you ever had any thoughts about the connections between those two scenes?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question and a good observation as well. I'm not sure that I actually picked that up the first time that I watched The Return, but I do think that it's maybe a callback to that very important dynamic. And I think that people do overlook just how important Donna really was to Laura and vice versa. And I think especially because of Donna not being there in The Return, people maybe overlook her impact on the story, but I do think that her impact was still felt, absolutely.
When I think of the reason why Gorham Cole would see that, I think of because at that point in The Return, Cooper's not whole because we still have Dougie Jones, we still have Mr. C out. And I think that because there is this hard to articulate relationship that Cooper and Laura have, that she is in desperate need for help because we see in part two where she's like sucked out of the Black Lodge. I think by this point, she's like Laura's just calling out for help. And I still don't know if it's if Gorham Cole is tapping into something, or if it's his affiliation with Cooper, because he does talk about the dream where he sees Cooper but he can't see his face. So even after 25 years of not seeing him, he still has this relationship. So I always kind of looked at that, but I always thought there was something about that scene and why a scene with Donna, even just loosely affiliated, would be in there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'll have to think about that some more.
Yeah, I know that's a huge question to ask. I know that The Return was not really something that was expected for a Donna episode. I guess coming back to the missing pieces, I actually forgot how much this scene was actually so focused about Donna. And Laura, she doesn't want to talk about the Leland Bob situation because it's sort of like what she says near the end of the movie, where she says, "There are things about me even Donna doesn't know." But she comes back, she's asking if she's her best friend. And as they're talking the missing pieces, Donna says that she herself is uptight. And she's actually almost crying this, saying that she hates it, and she thinks that Laura's put off by it. Laura, she says, Donna's face makes her feel better. So, she brings her inside, and they're just kind of reeling from everything. But that's when Doc Hayward comes in. He tries to do the little magic trick, and it's off screen. But I've come to the conclusion that from the time that Laura left to when she returned to Donna, she wrote that thing about the angels. And she wanted her father to give it to her to make Laura feel like she was not alone. Did you have any thoughts about how the angels are even loosely affiliated with Donna, and how like this scene where she talks about the angels and then she actually gets the angel at the end of Fire Walk with Me?
Oh, that is such a fantastic question. Yeah, wow. Wow. So, I think about the angels and their importance with Laura and everything. And I think that I'm not saying Donna's an angel, but I do think that she really represents that innocence. Laura really wants to protect her. And she's the purest thing, I think, that Laura has in her life. And I guess that could be one way that she's associated with the angels. It could also be, sort of the purity of the Hayward household in general, because it's really the opposite of the Palmer household. And Doc Hayward's a good man. Yeah, I think that maybe that could be part of it. I'm not gonna say that that's absolutely what it is. I mean, I think there's so many ways you could look at it. But I think that, yeah, in that context, that would make a lot of sense to me.
There's something about this where, even though it was unplanned that Moira Kelly would be the new Donna, I think that that's why this recasting actually retroactively fits in as time goes on for me, because I'll look back to these scenes and think, oh, Donna is much more, it's not just a friendship she has with Laura, it's not anything surface level. I would say her and James, I think they both equally understand Laura to some degree. I'll get into it when we get to season two, but I think that Donna's tapped into it just a little bit more, hence why I think the angels work with her. And admittedly, Donna does get a little more than she bargains for, because at the end of the scene where she's walking Donna out, they have that little endearing back and forth about like who is the muffin. But we get to the next night where Donna, she goes to the Palmer home, and this is even though she was picking up on the double life before, it's like it's becoming a lot more prevalent for her. And before we get into the real just like nitty gritty of it, I have to stress the most ridiculous line is when Maura Kelly looks at Sarah Palmer's ashtray and says, "If I had a nickel for every time your mother smoked, I'd be dead."
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
I think the reason why I have a hangup is that it doesn't seem like Lynch does not seem like someone who allows someone to improv. Like that line was explicitly written as is. So I think that's why that scene, it just gets more silly every time. And it's not like a bad silly. It's just sort of like a, why would Donna say that? I mean, I know teenagers or just people my age really, we say stuff that doesn't make sense, but
Yeah.
it's just such a weird scene.
It is, but I think that it's kind of adorable at the same time. Like, it's her being really dorky. You know, it doesn't make sense at all. It's such a silly thing to say, but it's almost like she's trying to make a clever joke to break the tension, but the joke doesn't really land. And I don't know, maybe that wasn't the intention, but I think that that would make sense because, I mean, that's a lot of what Donna's about, isn't it? You know, she's always constantly trying to be something that she isn't, and it not really working out all too well for her.
I think that there's some about this scene, at least as the night goes on, where there's that correlation between Donna's personality and what Laura's wearing in this scene. But I think it's important to at least, before we jump too much further ahead, is to talk about that Laura goes to the Roadhouse and then Donna follows her afterward. And this is actually a scene that really ramps up that Donna will not stand down, that she does want to be there for a friend because there's just so much that's just wrong with this scene. And not from like the way Lynch directed or it's written, but I always have had this hang up that Laura, she's like clearly in public and like this place that all these people congregate to, including the Bookhouse Boys. And the thing is that she's like crying in public after listening to Questions in a World of Blue. There's this clearly inappropriate interaction she's having with Buck and Tommy. And I think the reason why I have a hang up is that I remember in my first job, I worked at a restaurant and there was a guy who was my age. He was a senior in high school at that time. And he almost got arrested because a teacher caught him drinking public. I was like, this is a town of like barely like 5,000-ish people. Like, how do people not know that the homecoming queen is in such a compromising state? It reaffirms what Bobby says in the first season about how we knew there was something wrong, but we didn't do anything. But was that ever a hangup that you had for the scene, regarding to like the town? They see her and they're just not helping. Like Donna clearly is doing the best she can in this scene, but like the rest of the town to just turn a blind eye.
No, that's such a good point, and I definitely agree with you. And I think that that, like you said, definitely links into what Bobby had said at Laura's funeral. And I agree with him, you know. And I think that there's maybe a lot to be said about the bystander effect in the town of Twin Peaks. And I think that it is very apparent that there were all kinds of horrible things happening. People might not have known the sheer depth of it, but I do think that it was obvious that Laura was in trouble. And even before Fire Walk With Me, I think that was apparent. You know, we had so many clues throughout the show. And yeah, people did just turn a blind eye, you know, when don't make a fuss, that kind of attitude that people can sometimes have in small communities, and don't break away from that veneer of wholesomeness, you know, because if we talk about this, then other things are going to be exposed. You know, I do think that that all connects absolutely.
With the scene at hand, though, is that when Buck and Tommy go up to Laura, Donna promptly goes up afterwards. And of course, Laura's not really happy with it. But this is like the first of a few moments where Donna's really proven she's not going to back down because she takes the shot, which, teenagers like, no, it's like drinking isn't really the most shocking foray. But the fact that she kisses Tommy is like, it shows that Laura, she's like, yeah, she's not going to give up. But even before we get to Canada, there is that scene in The Missing Pieces around the car ride over. I think at this point, Donna's starting to realize that this is actually a really bad idea because Laura's a little too comfortable with Buck and she's put off by it. Tommy's driving like crazy fast, even does the little tail whip. And the thing that I thought was really interesting is that in The Missing Pieces, Laura clearly does coke and looks at Donna dead in the eye, and then Donna rejects it. But Scott Ryan, he's talking about in Your Lord Disappeared or in the first draft that Donna actually does do it. Now, there's a lot of stuff that I have strong conditional statements for in the script, and I'm glad that they didn't go that route. But did you ever have any thoughts about like this scene, and like do you think that they should have, it would have been better if they had her do it under peer pressure?
Oh, yeah. So I can really see it. I can see the merit either way, to be honest. But I do like that she didn't do it. I think that that says a lot about her character. How, even in a situation like that, she is still fundamentally really responsible. She's in a bad situation, she knows it, but she is still not really losing that inner sense of, responsibility that she has.
Yeah, I'm glad that they didn't have it either, because on one hand you could make the argument that Laura has a certain I don't want to say control, but she there's a certain way that she can get Donna to do something like what we were talking about in the Secret Diary. But I also like the fact that Donna, like, it's very clear that there's a cutoff point for her. And I think the fact that they show a cutoff point will make the next scene enhanced even more. But I do want to mention that the moment they go down that basement, the first thing that Laura says is, "Don't expect a turkey dog here." Now, I'm probably just being a little too over analytical, but I just think of like the turkey and the corn line, and when she's talking to James, and like the turkey that's on the map that Hawk has in the return. I always thought there's got to be something about like that line that's very deliberate, even if it was repurposed for the return. But I just thought that was at least worth addressing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't actually made that connection before.
Even the turkey jerky where Sarah Palmer has her meltdown. So I got to be honest, I don't really have a fully articulate explanation, but I just felt it was important to put that out there, because I don't think I put that in either my Laura Palmer episodes. But the one I did want to mention is that Laura and Donna, they have that I am the muffin, or you're the muffin line to and back and forth with each other. But Laura says it in a very clearly sexual way when they see Jacques Renault. And throw this on the pile of stuff that Donna is just like not happy to be around. And I do have to bring up the scene that just bugs me more and more. There's that scene when they spike her drink. And the thing is that the first time I thought that based off of Laura's reaction, she didn't see it. But every time I watch Fari walk, you just see it, like she looks at the corner of her eye and the way she says, "Chug-a-lug, Donna." This is a scene that I've had hangups on. And while when I did my first Laura Palmer episode with Aaron, I thought she had a good explanation. But did you have any thoughts about this scene and like why Laura would be so complicit and even encouraged with the chug-a-lug part?
Oh yeah, that's a really, yeah, that's a dark moment, I think. Yeah, that moment. I always look at that as that sort of Laura's that monstrous side of her that she talks about very openly in the diary, and she fears that she is becoming more and more corrupt. And I think that that is kind of the pinnacle of that, because encouraging your best friend to chug a spiked drink, I mean, that's really, really bad. But it's almost like she's at the point where she knows that she's not going to last much longer, and she's just kind of being as corrupt in that moment. Oh, sorry, my words. Oh my gosh. But yeah, I do see that as like the sort of apex, maybe, of that side of her that she doesn't like.
The next part I'll mention is that there's that what I think is actually a really upsetting POV shot where you see the spiked drink is starting to take a toll on her. And strangely enough, of all things, that's the one where Donna grabs Laura's jacket, and suddenly it's a complete change, because at first I thought it was the drugs that were kicking in, but each time I watch it, the more I'm like, no, there's something about Laura's clothing that sets people off. One thing is worth addressing is that what we're talking about in the Secret Diary about Ron not being the replacement Donna, this scene adds credence to it, because the moment Donna disappears, Ronette shows up. And the moment Ronette is like disappears from that scene is when Donna comes in. Because even like Ronette's like, "Oh shit, is that Donna Hayward?" That's when Laura, she runs over screaming. And because like I don't think there's any subtitles for that part, but like the way Cheryl Lee runs over and she grabs like the jacket and she's like screaming at Donna, and you can hear her say, "My stuff, like don't you ever touch my stuff." And then she gets her out. Jacques barely even like barely consciously helps them. But then the next morning, Donna looks like she's just had like the worst like night out. They're having this real sit down, and Donna's starting to think that like, oh, why do you do this? And Laura's main thing is that she says, I don't like when you touch my stuff. There's got to be something the way she talks about where she knows that the stuff that she wears will corrupt people. And I think that this was something that was retroactively done because of mostly the season two premiere, which we'll get to when we get to season two. But did you have any thoughts about this scene in terms of why this all came to be?
I do personally think that there's a lot of weight to that theory about Laura's clothes having some kind of effect on people. I always think about the season two premiere when Donna wore her sunglasses and she was like a different character altogether. And it happens even with Maddie later on. And I definitely think that that is not a coincidence. So, like you said, I do think it was. Perhaps retroactively added in Fire Walk With Me. But I don't think that that makes it any less impactful. And I think that that is a really interesting piece of lore. And, that's definitely a theory that I ascribe to myself.
I was dismissive about the whole clothing part for a while, but I remember when it was one of my rewatches for the season two premiere. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's Maddie that's first wearing the sunglasses, where she's sitting at the double R. And the moment she takes it off, she has her real glasses, snaps them, and says, I hate these. And it was actually Joyce Picker during my Maddie episode who talked about how from that point on, Maddie starts to, her hair starts to strain out, has a more of a Laura look to it. And in the case of Donna, she starts wearing the sunglasses. Definitely throughout the season two premiere. I don't know if she wears it too much beyond that, but she has this like quasi Audrey Horne thing going for her. James talks about how her behavior is different. So there's definitely something worth addressing in terms of why the stuff that that Laura wore would have a strange influence on others.
For sure. And I definitely think that that is the case.
And there's actually not too much to talk about Fire Walk Me at this point, but I have to point this out because Erin, she talked about this in my first Laura Palmer episode. There's that weirdly uncomfortable scene where Laura and Donna, they hug each other, but there's a way that they're like, they have their arms around each other and it looks like they're about to kiss. And to be fair, we could have said that this is when Leland walks in and he's the one that's really making it weird, but I remember I was like, when Aaron said that, I was like, oh, I thought I was the only one that thought there was like this weird energy to that scene. Do you think it's just like it's almost like Leland's perspective, or do you think that there was something else that was at play?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that they perhaps did have some kind of underlying thing throughout their relationship, not necessarily romance, but certainly very intensely strong feelings. And, when you're young, things get confusing and everything. And yeah, I do wonder about that scene a lot. I mean, I think it's interesting that it could be Leland's perspective, but no, I do think that there's definitely something in their dynamic. And I especially think that's the case with some of the things that Donna says throughout the series in particular. But maybe that's just my completely off-base interpretation.
I view Fire Walk With Me, at least beyond Dear Meadow, as explicitly as Laura's perspective. But I think the reason why I look at it as Leland's perspective is that it's once again another scene where Ronette is the replacement Donna, because the moment he sees that, there's that transition of Laura in the motel room with Ronette. And very clearly, that was going to be like a more sexual thing that Leland was going to go for with Teresa Banks. But again, I just want to point out is that there's just something where I just think that it's like more of a Leland thing where it's like he's just kind of projecting his like perverted nature onto that. And also just the fact that Donna and Rhett have this like strange connection with each other. Admittedly, that's mostly the last scene we have with Donna up until the very last day of high school. I noticed this with subsequent rewatches that James, he kind of gives a glance to what seemed like Donna as like Laura. She's like dealing with truly realizing that Bob and Leland are the same person. But Donna, it's like, it's really just the one scene where she's just like, I don't know if ignoring is really the right word, but it seems like she's just kind of focused on herself that day. This is one where I just think that Laura, she felt so irreversibly hopeless that even her friends couldn't be there for her. And also the scene where she says to James that night, there are things about me even Donna doesn't know about me. And I think they're just like at least the vaguest of connections with those two.
Yeah, I completely agree.
We do show that scene when she does leave school for the day, though, where it shows the school desk that's now completely vacant. And that actually is a pretty good transition to the original series, because before we get to the revisit the vacant seat, now we have Laura Flynn Boyle's Donna, where she has this semi-flirty relationship with James, and even seems like she's friendly enough with Audrey. What I think is interesting is that this is the first of two very prominent scenes where Donna just instinctively knows that something terrible happened. To be fair, it's the screaming girl that sets it off, but Donna's the first one that intuitively knows that Laura is not alive anymore. This is a scene where I think it's become a little too much of a running gag of Donna crying one too many times. I don't think she cries that much throughout the original series. She cries more than most people.
Completely agree, thank you. People do sort of they meme that scene quite a bit, and I understand, but I do think that there's something very powerful about that scene, and I think that it's very vulnerable. I think it's very well acted as well, and I do think that Donna has a really strong sense of intuition, as you rightly highlighted.
One thing that is worth mentioning is because Laura is so connected to all these other characters, is that her relationship with Mike, yeah, once again, we have to revisit Mike once again, but the way he talks to her is very telling of that relationship at large, because he shows up and he says, like, where were you? Like, my best friend is in trouble. It's like, she was my best friend. And then he's getting adversarial with Big Ed. There's just a lot to be said about Donna and Mike's relationship, where it's so hard to believe that these two were together for 3 years because of how they're interacting.
Yeah, honestly, I 3 months would almost seem like a stretch, let alone 3 years.
She does end up being questioned by Cooper about the picnic scene. And I think this is one of my, certainly in season one of my favorite scenes, because the way Donna, where she's seen Laura in that video and she wants to cover for her. And Cooper seems like, I think by that point, he knows like what he's supposed to be looking for. But I just love like the way how Laura Flynn Boyle plays the scene where it's like, being able to see her friend who she knows now is deceased, but there's just something special about the way that scene plays out and the way the music kicks in too.
I completely agree. Like, I really do think that that's one of Donna's finest moments. It really shows how loyal she is, and her loyalty is a bit of a double-edged sword for her, but she is absolutely steadfast with Laura. No matter what Laura said to her, and she said some pretty hurtful things, Donna stuck by her, and even in death, she wants to protect her. And I don't know, I do think that's really lovely.
What I was mentioning when she met Big Ed is that she gets the note to meet James at the Roadhouse. Once again, if you thought Mike wasn't bad enough, this is basically the soft breakup between the two, because she does tell Harriet that night, like, hey, please cover me. I don't want our parents to know that I'm going out after they're explicitly told not to go out. But the thing is that she goes to the Roadhouse, Mike is there, and he screams her name. And not only is he like clearly being verbally abusive, it's actually getting like pretty physical. That's not even going to the fact that it actually gets physical when Ed steps in. Like, to be fair, that's when Donna steps away and she goes with, I believe it's Joey Paulson. But yeah, it's we get the what is the first scene that I was like, I kind of tilted my head at, because I think both what we see behind the scenes and on screen is that I had a hard time with the James and Donna romance, especially on a first watch. I was like, oh, Laura, she's like barely been dead for 24 hours. Is this really okay for the two of them? And believe it or not, there's still back and forth online. I see people like, get like back and forth about it, because I can at least go with the mindset that they both learned a lot about Laura within those last few days, and that's what's connecting them. Also, they're teenagers and they're just being very impulsive how they feel about each other. But I do tilt my head at the scene, because I look at it, I'm like, this does not feel like a Lynch scene to me. Like, James feels a very Lynch-related archetype, but I always view this scene, even the first time I watched the pilot, is a Mark Frost written scene, because in the case of Lynch, I look at him as that there's a certain vision that he has. But I think in the case of Mark Frost, he knew how to make it into a subversive soap opera to keep people engaged for subsequent episodes. And I don't want to say Lynch was incapable of it, but just that Mark Frost, he was much more attuned to how it worked, like working on network television. But I know we're getting a little bit behind the scenes, but did you have any thoughts about this particular moment when they kiss and like how that relationship sets off?
I'm probably someone who is maybe more sympathetic towards their relationship than I think most fans are. I do think that you can absolutely justify it by the fact that they were 16. They were in a pretty vulnerable position, and maybe it wasn't the best decision in the world, but they were so young, and I can't say as I really blame them for what happened. And I certainly don't think they meant any malice by it. But yeah, I do like that scene. Yeah, because it definitely sets things in motion, like you say. And I am pretty partial to the more soap opera elements of Twin Peaks. So.
One thing I do want to mention is that that's when James and Donna bury the necklace because, I think even for people watching the show for the first time, it would have been hard to believe that James would be the one to kill Laura. But also, there's a lot that does not look good. When they do get in trouble and they go to the sheriff's station, Doc Hayward comes in to get Donna. And this is actually a really lovely scene about how he says it to her. It was like, it's like, you scared me and your mother, but I understand you wouldn't do this unless you had a very good reason. And then he says something akin to, is like, oh, there's only one question left. How do we get Harriet's bike back? And that's it. That's it for the pilot. But I have to say is that, but the next episode, not only is this my favorite scene from Donna, this is actually my favorite scene in at least the first season. It's a scene when she wakes up and she sees her mother and she says, it's, and I quote, "It's the most beautiful dream and the most terrible nightmare all at once." Like to me, that scene just describes everything for the original series for me in terms of like
Yes.
how I view the show. I don't think I could say enough about this scene, about how this is so perfectly done, how I think Donna was the right person to say this. But what do you think of this line?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It is completely emblematic of everything that Twin Peaks to me is. And for a character to sum it up in that way, but in such a poetic way. I don't know. I just love that moment. I really do. And I'm also just a big fan of seeing Donna interact with her parents. I think that it's always such nice interactions. I mean, barring the end of season two, but before then.
Yeah, no, certainly the first season, there is a lot of wholesomeness that I think is much needed because even without knowing, especially a first time, not knowing anything about the Palmers, there's still something about just the family environment that the Haywards facilitate. Again, barring the latter season two, that really adds to the original series for me. One thing I should mention is that this is more of like a happenstance for Donna. I feel like the scene could have hypothetically happened without her. But we have to mention later on that episode when she goes to the Palmers and Leland says, like, be gentle with Sarah. But Sarah, she's having like this meltdown. She sees Laura superimpose over Donna's face. And she's like, clearly getting very emotional. But then we have the Bob scene. And this is just as mortifying for, oh, no, it's, to be fair, it's more mortifying for Sarah. But Donna's just like mortified and confused. This is really more so about Sarah, but I remember like I always thought the scene was viscerally horrifying until Grace Zabriskie brought up one particular thing because Sarah, she keeps screaming upon seeing Bob. But the thing is that the moment Leland comes in, you think she's done screaming, and there's that one last scream that etches out right before the commercial break. And suddenly
Yes.
the scene just becomes more funny to me because of that one extra scream. To come back to a more, I guess we were saying before, a more positive family environment is that she brings James over to dinner. If it's not this episode, it's at least the next episode. And there's just like the way that James is interacting with him and then her parents. It seems like it's much more wholesome. And it's like I think it reaffirms the whole idea that Mike Nelson, his behavior at the Roadhouse, has basically just killed that relationship altogether. Yeah, there's no question about the fact that James is here. There's nothing like about like that makes you think that Will or Eileen are talking about it behind her back. And then James, he actually has a really great point where he says that like secrets are very destructive and that he wants there to be no secrets between him and Donna. Even though I do have my conditional statements for James and Donna's romance, I do think that sets a very healthy precedent for a relationship that is, albeit pretty impulsive otherwise.
Yeah, and I think that's a very mature perspective to have, especially at that young age as well. But I also find it hard to believe that she would have ever brought Mike back to her parents' house.
I'm sure after being told about all the stuff at the sheriff's station, I'm sure that they were more than fine to have him cut off from their lives. This is one I didn't even think about till I did my Doc Hayward episode, but there's that part where I believe it's that they finish going to church, but the Hayward family, they're all at the Double R Diner, and then Audrey comes in, and she's doing her dance. And things that, the Haywards, they're kind of looking at her like, who is this girl? But I think that retroactively, knowing what we know after the season two finale, do you think that whenever any of the horns show up, do you think that Will and Eileen just have this like nonverbal, oh my God, like how do we like it's the half sister of Donna?
I always view those scenes like after I watch for the first time and then I rewatch time. Those scenes take on a very different light for me. I don't know, the way that they look at Audrey is really interesting. They give her this really strange stare. It's almost like that they don't want to look, but they can't take their eyes away from it, you know? And I mean, that would definitely be a pretty good metaphor for that dynamic. You know, they don't want to acknowledge what happened, but it happened, and there's no changing that. But they're trying to sort of just skirt over that.
I'm going to jump a little bit with seasons one and two with this next comment, but that scene does kind of set the precedent that Audrey and Donna, even though they have different motivations for uncovering who killed Laura, that there is some sort of partnership that's low-key set in this scene. And then, of course, people talk about more so with Audrey, but there's the iconic bathroom scene where they're going a little bit further, where I think that's the scene where Donna talks about, or not, sorry, Audrey is the one that talks about One-Eyed Jax and how she's going to investigate on her own. And from what I understand, I think it was John Bernard in Blue Rose Task Force that said that Sherilyn Fenn was dealing with pneumonia during early season two, which probably explains why she was confined to One-Eyed Jax for the first six episodes. But I think those two would have had a good partnership in terms of being able to cover who killed Laura if they were able to cross over more so. And even near the end of season two, when there's the whole, hey, what's going on with my mother? Why is she going to Ben Horn's office? I think that Sherilyn Fenn and Laura Flynn Boyle, from what I understand, there's a little bit of a combative nature with them behind the scenes, but I think they would have been really good to to have on the screen together for like stuff like this.
I do think that they had a fantastic spark and that those two characters were just so interesting together. And I really, truly would have loved to have seen more of their dynamic explored, you know, especially once that revelation was out there. Actually, before The Return came out, I wrote like these goofy little fan fictions about what I imagined Donna and Audrey's lives being in the future. And yeah, I always imagined them to be on, you know, good terms, take different paths in their lives, but you know, they'll be on good terms and have a healthy dynamic. And of course, that didn't end up happening, but you know, it was a nice thought.
I'll save it for when we get near the end of the episode, but I think on some level, and to be fair, I don't know what you had written down, but I think that did happen on some capacity after the original series and even during the return. But like I said, I'll save that for when we get to that. But I do think it's worth mentioning is that there is that scene where when she goes to the funeral, and apparently, I don't know if it was just written or if they filmed it, but apparently it was at least written that Donna and Mike, and yes, this will be the last time, oh, second last time I bring up Mike, but she was going to just formally break up with him either before or even very early on during the funeral. I just thought that was worth mentioning, just because there's so much about that funeral that's just intense for everyone on top of that relationship. There's got to be something to be said about going to your best friend's funeral, and then also on top of that, there's James, where he doesn't even really show up till midway, and then when he does, there's a fight that breaks out. And we haven't even gotten into her relationship with Maddie at this point, because I think it's just starting to go. She knows that she's obviously the cousin of Laura, and she's going to be tied into trying to figure out how to solve Laura's murder, even though that her, Maddie, and James are not the right people to do it. The next thing I think is interesting that kind of leads Donna into a more esoteric realm for me is that James and Donna, they do go retrieve that necklace out in the woods, and they find out it's gone. And the two things I think are interesting is that Donna starts talking about how Laura said that Sarah was quote unquote kind of spooky. So Donna at least has like a little bit of an inkling of just like Sarah isn't just like, I guess a dysfunctional mother, that there's something else going on if Laura is saying this. But what I think is interesting is that they're talking about Laura's dreams, but they realize they're being watched by an owl. And this is before they set up anything about the mythos for the owls from the giant in season two. So when I saw that on my first watch, like, I gotta write that down. Like, I don't know if it means something, but I feel like the presence of an owl can't, especially before they establish the mythos, that has to be worth addressing.
No, I completely agree. And I do think that there's a subtle esotericism to Donna. I think a lot of things actually about her character are pretty subtle, but yeah, that's one of them for sure. She is very intuitive. She does seem to have a good understanding, I think, of others. She might not always know how to go about that, but I do think that she sees a lot more than maybe she can sort of come to terms with. Maybe she doesn't, she sees things, but she doesn't quite understand what they are, so she puts it aside. But yeah, it's really interesting that there's that acknowledgement about Sarah Palmer so early on. I think that's fantastic.
For the remainder of the season, though, it is primarily Donna, Maddie, and James. And their heart's in the right place, but there's tensions that are rising, not just because they're not the right people to solve Laura's murder, but it's when Maddie's dressed as Laura and James has a certain look that Donna definitely does not approve of. And that's not even going the fact that they're in the middle of trying to lure Jacoby out, which could go completely wrong and does go completely wrong in so many ways because. One, Jacoby grabs a gun, so God knows what would have happened, if they were all there or something was like misconstrued. But then there's the whole part where they break into, well, I think that Maddie's still out, but James and Donna break into Jacoby's office, and there's a real ticking clock because like they don't know when Jacoby's gonna come back. So when they set off the music, it's like, what do we do? He's gonna know someone's gonna be here. I guess the worst ways possible, the Jacoby gets attacked and is nearly killed because of this stint. And then also Bobby, he plants the drugs in James's motorcycle. So this is more of a problem for James, but the fact that Donna and Maddie are kind of tied with it, it's a bit of a factor they have to deal with as well. And I know there's a lot of the exposition dump I did for season one, but I just want to hear your thoughts about this relationship and the ramifications of their actions trying to solve Laura's murder.
So, like you said, their hearts were definitely in the right place. However, from an ethical perspective, they a legal perspective, they were completely the wrong people, and they were in way over their heads. And what happened was the best case scenario, and I say that in air quotes. It still wasn't good, but it could have been a lot worse, like you say. And I just feel quite sorry for them in this instance because, they're really trying. They think they're doing the right thing, but it just ends up making things worse in so many ways. And it makes me think about that expression, the road to ruins paved with good intentions. And I think that that pretty much sums up their dynamic,
One last thing I should mention before we get to season two. I'm pretty sure it's the season one finale where they go back to the Hayward home and they're listening to the tape that they retrieve. And it's a really awkward sit for everyone because Maddie, this is her cousin who she thought was like a little more innocent. I think Donna, this is the one where she's probably the least hindered, but James is clearly upset because the tape is explicitly about him. And even though it's a tough sit, I think they feel like they're better for it. However, coming into the next season, I know we talked about the changing of clothes, at least Laura's clothes, how it influences people, but I think it's important to just quickly revisit it because Maddie, she has the glasses, but then she snaps her real glasses and starts straightening her hair to look more like Laura. Donna, I think it was crude because in my notes, I wrote down she has great value Audrey Horne energy. I think the reason why I wrote it is because, from what I understand, Laura Flynn Boyle. She didn't like the fact that Sherilyn Fenn had this like massive allure with the public and that Donna was like the cutesy girl. And I think it was Mark Frost that did say that he will try to rewrite that to make it work for her. But again, this is another one of those things where, on one hand, I think an actor or actress, they should be happy with the role they have, especially on a groundbreaking show like this. But again, much like we were saying about with Fire Walk Me, how like Moira Kelly's Donna could walk so the Laura Flynn Boyle one could run. I think having this change actually does make it interesting because it does show that there is something about Laura's influence that does change Donna from this point on. Because she goes to see James, and then he's like, whoa, she wanted to just do it between the bars. And then at the end of that episode, that's when she's starting to close in about going in on the Meals on Wheels route that Laura did and as a means to go through. But before that, we have another scene at the Hayward home where the Palmers, they're over. It's kind of a strange one because it's only a week after Laura's death, and Leland's hair, it's all white. He's trying to sing. Sarah actually is pretty innocuous, but there's just so much in that scene of like Leland where it's like he starts singing and he gets a little too hyped up and he collapses on the ground. I know it's a scene that Donna's pretty much passive in, but she does talk to Maddie and she does talk about how she found about the Meals on Wheels route. So even that still advances her character in terms of where they're going to go. But I guess before we really dive into everything with Harold Smith and the Meals on Wheels route, did you have any thoughts about this scene with like Leland Palmer or anything like that?
I think I probably have more thoughts on the changes that Donna's character underwent, and I don't know too much about the behind the scenes stuff, but just looking at it from a character perspective, I do think that it actually made a lot of sense and that it was for the best that she underwent those quite drastic transformations. It might not have been the audience's favorite thing, but I think it made sense for everything that she was going through. She was grappling with trauma and didn't really have any ways of speaking to anybody. You know, the climate was very different. And I think it makes a lot of sense that she would take on these qualities that her deceased best friend, who she absolutely adored, as far as Donna's concerned, she oozed all that confidence, you know, that sex appeal and all that kind of stuff. And I think that it also maybe came from her trying to compete with Maddie as well, and all those that whirlwind of emotions, you know. But yeah, that scene with the dinner party, that is a great scene because it is just such a disaster, you know, the way how Leland is completely unhinged. I think that was actually around the point where I thought, okay, he is really suspicious.
And I know this is a total non sequitur, but I don't know if I can fit it in from this point on. But I have to point out in the season two premiere and then the next episode, they gave Donna like the best type of sweaters that they could have given for her
Oh,
character.
yeah.
There's something that is so iconic about the blue sweater that she has, which she has in the next Lynch directed episode where Maddie's killed. But then there's the orange sweater that just, I guess I just want to say I like the sweaters, but I just knew I couldn't fit that in any of the rest of the season two conversation.
I completely agree. It might not have a lot of bearing on the plot, but I do think that they were fantastic looks. And I do love the way how they styled Lara's hair as well. You know, she has it a little bit longer, a bit bouncier. I think it's just such a fantastic look. I mean, it might have been to be great value wardrobe on, like you say, but I don't know. I think it was a good look.
Yeah, I remember that was a weird thing I had a hang up on with the first time I watched the YouTube premiere. I was like, wait, how did Donna's hair grow so much in the course of a day? And I realized I was like, I should just accept that. And plus, also, when you get to Fire Walk Me, if especially if you watch it after the original series, like, okay, I should not even care about hair continuity at this point. And the next scene that I have is that she meets the Tremonts when she goes on her first Meals on Wheels route, because I'm pretty sure it's before she meets Harold Smith, where she goes in. And I know people hate it when I say this. When I look at Frances Bay, I know what we're supposed to look at her as the Tremonts, the Chalfonts, but to me, she will always be Happy Gilmore's grandmother. And there's something that's like, even when she plays like a creepy character like the Tremonts slash Chalfonts, I still just am endeared by her presence.
I love that.
I think there is something to be said about Donna being in this like rather esoteric scene, because I guess to be fair, you couldn't really have anyone else in that scene just based off of the fact that she took Laura's route. But you know, she comes in, you have Pierre Tremont, played by David Lynch's son. He does the magic trick with the cream corn. And the thing is that whenever I think about magic, I think of magic with a K versus illusions. And this is very
Me too.
clearly magic because there's because the way that scene's played out, Lynch does a great job with the sound and just like the way that returns to the plate. Again, this is another one where almost like the angels from Fire Walk With Me, there is something about this that's tied to Laura and maybe even Harold. I don't know if I can articulate on Harold, but I think this is another case that Donna, even though she is in certainly show tied with the soap opera aspects, that there are the esoteric aspects that she's loosely based in.
Completely. And again, I think it's one of those things that it's fairly subtle, you know, like in conjunction with the scene we talked about with her talking about Sarah Palmer and the owl and everything. But I don't think it's a coincidence that there are several scenes where there is something kind of spooky going on and Donna's involved. You know, I don't think that that was happenstance by any means.
This one is actually more so about the Chalfants above all else, but I think of that scene in Fire Walk With Me where Agent Desmond, he goes back to the trailer park and Carl Rob talks about how the trailers disappeared and there are two Chalfants. I mean, it could be anything because I know that entities of the Black Lodge can be more omnipresent, but do you think that they went from the Fat Trout trailer park directly to Harold's, or do you think there is something in between?
Again, that's not something that I've really thought too much about, but yeah, that's really interesting. And I like the idea of the omnipresence as well. That's cool, yeah.
I think of the proximity that the Chalfants had with Teresa Banks leading up to the events of her death, and then when the trailer disappears, that it's because after she's dead, and I think after Agent Desmond, that's like, it kind of ran its course. There's just something about how I think they're only at certain places for necessity. So if I had to guess, I don't think the Chalfants, at least as we see it through Donna's perspective, really made their way up until probably when Laura gave Harold the diary, just because of like everything that would surround like this mystery of like Leland and Bob. And again, there's so much to talk about the Black Lodge that I don't know if I could really pull the thread in this episode, but I do think there it is worth addressing about why the Tremont / Chalfants would be there.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Absolutely. I really like that, but I'm going to definitely look at that with different eyes next time.
But later on that night, because she just gets a very indirect interaction from Harold, where I think she just leaves the note. I think he accepts it as she walks away. But we have what is honestly not a fan favorite scene of just you with most fans. But I think it is important for Donna because she does look at James and Donna because he's looking at Maddie and not her. It's bad enough where actually Donna steps away. And I think she does get the call from Harold Smith during that time when Bob comes out to see Maddie. Yeah, I know there's a lot that goes on. Okay, now, even just saying out loud, I don't even realize how much is really going on in the scene until I actually verbalize it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I honestly, again, I'm probably not with most fans here, but I like the Just You scene. I like the song. I like everything about it. But my favorite thing about it and the reason why I like it is because that vulnerability that Lara has in her eyes is incredible. Like, people do not talk enough about how much of an incredible actress she is, in my opinion. The looks that she's giving to James and Maddie, it so much is said in that moment, you know. And of course, Cheryl Lee is Maddie. She's also absolutely fantastic. And you have it, all these strong emotions set to like a kind of throwback cheesy song, and I don't know, it really belies all of that intensity that's bubbling, you know. And then of course the Bob scene happens after as well. It's God, I really, really love that scene.
I can't really see us being able to talk about Just You beyond this, but I have to say is that you're probably in good company with liking the song, because I know that Angela Badalamenti and David Lynch loved recording it with James Marshall. Like, James Marshall thought it was like the worst thing ever, especially because he couldn't sing it in his proper vocals, just the way that they worked on the scene before without him. But I just remember, like, I saw James Marshall, like it was a few years ago, right before COVID. And he was talking about when he was recording it, and David Lynch and Angela Badalamenti were just having so much fun saying it. And James Marshall's thinking, like, this is like the worst thing I've ever heard. So even the realm of recording this was still very polarizing for them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I do think that it's really quite adorable. I'm a fan.
And I guess because she gets the call from Harold Smith during this time, this is where he becomes a strong focal point for Donna for at least the next four episodes, because she meets him the next day. And I mean, I didn't know what to expect, but I didn't think it would be like a relatively young, good-looking guy that would be the show. And to be fair, I don't think Donna actually picked up on that either. But the thing is that in addition to being charmed by him, is that she sees Maddie and James holding hands at the Double R, and it leads to her She was already not happy with, like, seeing Maddie dresses Donna and then the Just You scene. But this is the first scene where I think Donna is much more outwardly angry towards them, more so James. But this is where a lot of the soap opera stuff starts to kick in, because them holding hands, it was just bad timing on her part. But I think the fact that they're more intimate in terms of their physical embrace at the Palmer home, that really just does not sit well for Donna at all. And that's when we have the infamous James screaming "Why!" running down the street. And of course, that's not even go the fact that Leland comes down, and I forgot the order, but does James basically knock everything off the table and then Leland comes down, or is it the other way around?
Leland is there when he knocks everything down in a strop.
I mean, it's still a bad look either way. I mean, I was willing to give a pass to like the whole they're teenagers, but I think like when you're at your deceased girlfriend and her father is there, and you just destroy something, it's such a bad, like, how awkward was it for him to go back into that house? Maybe it's a good thing that he, like, strange enough that Leland got arrested that night, because it's the only thing that could have made it less awkward for James.
Like, that is a profoundly uncool moment. And again, I defend James probably more than most people would, but no.
Oh no, I'm saying this as someone where me and Andrew Greaves and you are probably the only people that genuinely like James. But even for me, I have to be like, no, that's not a good look for him.
Yeah, I draw the line at that.
This does basically, certainly in Donna's eyes, justify going to Harold's place a little more frequently. And there is a little more of an intimacy that's going on. But I think that there's a lot of great scenes that do come out of this, because I know we were talking about with the secret diary, where Donna, when she sees the three older guys, the way that Laura Flynn Boyle talks about that scene, I think of Lenny Van Dolan's performance as Harold, about how he's just so just transfixed and just like just blown away by the way she delivers that. Even for me, where I jokingly refer to her as great value Audrey Horne, I think that's such a great scene. And it's like, it shows that like the new Donna that we have, like it's one of the reasons why I eased into it relatively easily.
Yeah, that's one of my absolute favorite performances. I just think that both actors are absolutely arresting in that scene. They are fantastic. And the way she gives life to that story, that we'd had a glimpse of in the Secret Diary. Oh, it's amazing. I would love to hear an audiobook from her.
I think it's shortly around this time where she does stumble across Laura's secret diary, and I think it's within this short period of like Harold leaves and then he comes back, so she can't really do much with it. She does tell Maddie, I'm pretty sure. Actually, the one thing, because I know we were ragging on James for the last scene, the one thing I will give James though is that when he was told don't pursue this murder mystery, he's the one who's pretty good about saying no, we shouldn't do it. But Donna and Maddie are still very insistent, and once again, they're putting themselves in serious danger. But before we get to any of that danger, I do think it's worth mentioning is that I remember when I first watched the scene where Harold, he says that he'll read the diary to Donna, but he will pick and choose the passages. I remember the first time I thought, I was like, oh, this seems like a weirdly controlling thing. I'm not getting a good read on this guy. When you read the secret diary, it's like, okay, I think I can kind of understand why. Do you have any thoughts about Donna's relationship to the diary and her determination to get it?
So I think that she's in such a difficult position. I know I keep saying this, but she really is. And I think she thinks she wants to know, but maybe that isn't the best thing, objectively speaking. Those were Laura's innermost thoughts. And that kind of comes into the question of ethics. Is it okay to really read someone's innermost thoughts, even if they are deceased? Personally, I would want to leave that alone, but I do understand her curiosity as well. And I think that the whole dynamic with Harold Smithers is a really difficult one because, he is a lot older, and I don't think it's really right for him to sort of, he's in possession of something that's very important. Legally speaking, as well. And then to sort of say to a teenage girl, oh, yeah, I'll choose which parts I read, that never really sat right with me.
I know that the relationship between Don and Harold is a major point of contention. I think the one of the scenes that I know John Bernardi's brought up on his podcast was the offering her, I think it was wine. And when I think of Harold, I don't think even the biggest Harold Smith fans I've met, there's never been a good gauge on how old he actually is. Because keep in mind, Sherilyn Fenn was 24 playing a high schooler. So while Lenny Van Dolin, I think he was in his late 20s at that point, because there's liberties with like 20-somethings playing teenagers. I've even dismissed it as being him potentially 22, which is still a little bit past the cutoff point. But having said that, you were talking about the ethics of Donna and the secret diary. I think of the scene with the two of them where she's kind of toying with them, like she has the diary in her hands, and Harold's like, no, like I need it back. And the thing is that she walks outside with it, and then she realizes just how truly agoraphobic he is. But what I think is interesting, I think of how he actually does take those extra steps outside to try and retrieve the diary. Whereas in Fire Walk With Me, when Laura says to him, she says, I don't know if I can see you again, probably never. And you see how devastated Harold Smith is. And the only thing he can do is like go up to the door, not even open it. So I think the fact that he does actually take those extra steps outside, it says a lot about the loyalty he has to Laura. And I know that with this scene, it's Donna and Harold. It's about their perspective on what's right for Laura. And of course, there's like a, how much we know or don't know. Even with Harold having the possession, have the diary in his possession, there's essential pages that are ripped out. So there's a lot about Laura that they know and don't know at the same time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, I think that was also a good point that you said that we don't actually know how old he is. I always just assumed that he was like, late 20s, I guess probably because he seems to have his own house and things like that. So I figured that he was probably quite a bit older. But yeah, that is a good point. And I think that you're absolutely right about his loyalty towards Laura as well. But Donna also has her loyalty to Laura. So there's two kind of conflicting perspectives there, and they're neither right nor wrong necessarily.
I was talking about the ethics that Donna has. This is where it gets a little more muddled because, we can say what we will about Harold Smith, but I still think that the plan of luring Harold into his plans while Maddie steals the secret diary, this is just a really bad plan all around. And honestly, James, he did the right thing, and he actually it was a good thing he happened to be at the Double R right when Maddie showed up to get coffees to go, because I know that this is a scene that is like a major point of contention for multiple reasons and for all characters involved, barring James, strangely enough. It's when Maddie, she's trying to get the diary and she can't quite get it to work so she can get the false bookshelf out. But there's that scene where once Harold finds out, he does grab that gardening tool. He digs it into him, but I could be wrong, but I think that that scene, I forget if it's in the end of that episode or the beginning of the next episode, but the fact that he's closing in, there's been discussion about that was not in the script. That it was, I think it was Leslie Linka Glatter that pushed for it. But people are very defensive about Harold in terms of like if he was in the right or in the wrong because Lenny Van Dolin himself. And I think even Cheryl Lee, if and you can tell me if I'm wrong about that, but Lenny Van Dolin certainly said that he would never go after someone else. He'd bring that violence back on himself. But I maintain that the fact that he was closing in on them, it's not a good look, and James was totally in the right to jump in. But yeah, then James rescues Donna and Maddie, and then actually as Donna says, like she says that he's agoraphobic, he's not going to chase us, so they can unwind a little bit easier. And I don't know if there's too much else that goes on with this episode relating to her, but I think of like when, oh, I forget which scene comes first. Is it the scene when she goes back to the Tremonts and Chalfonts, or is it when she finds out Harold Smith is dead?
Oh, I can't remember.
Because I guess we'll just bring up the part about Harold Smith when she finds out that he's dead at the Roadhouse. Or I think she knows by that point. But this is another scene that I really love where I have to kind of walk back the Great Valley Audrey Horne thing once more, because she's like very much in this feeling that she's responsible for it. That she, had it not been for that, he wouldn't have killed himself. And James, he actually says that, like, oh, he was a sick man. Like, he was going to do this no matter what. Not exactly the most nuanced take from James's part, but it's at least an understandable one from James. But there's that great scene when she starts lip syncing, Rocking Back Inside My Heart, where it's like, the hatchet has been buried with the whole Maddie thing, where I think it's a way, I kind of look at it as a way that she's kind of non-verbally saying that she forgives all the Maddie stuff, that her and James are clearly exclusive with each other.
Yeah, that's been my interpretation too. Yeah.
Admittedly, things do get really sad pretty shortly after, because this is the moment where Maddie is killed. And I know I talked about it in great detail in my Maddie episode, but I think it's interesting that the people who pick up on it are Dale Cooper, the waiter, Bobby, strangely enough, and Maddie is uncontrollably crying. Like, in terms of visceral reactions, she's feeling it the most. Do you ever have any thoughts about the intuition that Donna has? Because I think it's not unlike the pilot when she cries upon Laura's desk being vacant, or even like when you were talking about like the angels or even the cream corn, where it's like she's just loosely affiliated with these esoteric aspects.
Yeah, and I do think as well that that particular scene when, you know, she's really upset and she knows something's wrong with Maddie, I think that that's also like a kind of throwback to the pilot episode as well, you know, from that directorial point of view. But I think that from a character point of view, I definitely think that that's again another nod to her really strong sense of intuition. She's maybe one of the most emotional characters in Twin Peaks, and she always becomes kind of like the face of those really big moments. And I think that's really interesting that she's sort of emblematic of that. And I wonder if it's because, you know, she is young, she looks the part. Maybe it's because she's Laura's best friend, so she's always in the thick of all that. I don't know. It's really interesting to me anyway, and that's something I've definitely noticed.
The next scene that we have is that it's the day after Maddie has been killed. And to be fair, these are two high schoolers, and they're seeing what they think is a grieving father. But there's a scene where they go in, and he's just like indiscriminately playing golf balls, and he throws in that guilt trip about like, he said that they just missed her. It's like she was disappointed that you didn't show up to see her. But, like, I don't think they're in immediate danger, but if things could go wrong, it could be potentially the scene. Do you have any thoughts about the golf ball scene and just like what it meant for Donna and James to be there at that moment?
Yeah, I think that that moment is that's such a fantastic scene. You know, Ray Wise is just brilliant as Leland in that state that he's in. You know, he's so menacing, and I think that Donna and James, they definitely know that something is really not right at all. They don't know exactly what it is, and I don't think that they're thinking that Leland's a killer at that point, but they know that something is really not right at all, because, you know, and the way that Leland says that, like you said, it's very manipulative. You know, he's really laying it on thick. And oh yeah, it's a very chilling scene, I think.
Yeah, for me, I agree with all of it, with the exception that I still think that they're very oblivious. There's a couple of things I have to talk about before we get to that scene, but one thing that's probably worth mentioning is that it is later on where they see Andy at the Double R Diner, where he starts saying, "I'm a lonely soul" in French, and immediately Donna knows that this is something about Harold. So this is the moment where she goes and she finds out that Harold, I think that she knows that Harold killed himself, but she goes back to the Tremonts and Chalfonts with Cooper. And this is where I think it's a Tremont. It's clearly not Francis Bay, but she has like this thing that she was going to try to mail back to, I believe, the sheriff station. But it's like that final diary entry. And once again, this is a very strong moment of Donna being loosely connected to the esoteric. But it's that when she reads, it's the final diary entry. I believe it's February 23rd, is when Laura says, "Tonight is the night that I die." Do you think that this is from the secret diary, or do you think this is from the quote unquote like fake diary that she had the Palmer home? Because after she gives the diary to Harold Smith, and not even that, I think it contradicts stuff in the secret diary. I feel like it could be anything, but I just want to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, that's I keep saying this, that's a good question, but you know, I could see an argument for either one of them, but I've always been inclined to think that that was from the fake diary. Yeah, I don't know, like it doesn't really seem to kind of match her style overall that she kept in her secret diary. Do you know what I mean? Like she had a couple of short entries in there, but overall she was much more willing to explore those innermost intimate thoughts. And that doesn't seem to really match her style. You know, that seems like her fake style that she employed for the fake diary.
I think maybe in some cases, because I think of in The Return, it's when Frank Truman and Hawk are going through Laura's secret diary. And put aside the fact that those pages are well preserved when they were clearly destroyed in the original series, that's a whole rabbit hole for another episode. But it is worth addressing that, at least according to Hawk, he says that it was Leland that held on to them. So maybe the idea of it being from the secret diary or Laura's real diary, maybe that's like, maybe I'm asking the wrong question, but I think it's just because one of those pages, it says the good Dell is in the lodge. And in my mind, I'm not sure if she wrote it in her quote unquote fake diary or she unceremoniously went back to Harold's. And it just was not a scene that really, I guess, needed to be there. Or again, like I was saying, is that Fire Walk Me is a movie where trauma and memory don't go well for Laura. So in my head canon, it could be that she went back to Harold and then we just didn't see it.
I could see that being very likely.
Now that Leland has like killed Maddie and that her and James, there's like a bit of immediate danger. We do have a scene where James, I think, too impulsively proposes to her at the Double R. And I wrote my notes. I was like, what could possibly go wrong? Actually, not even about the relationship, but like the thing is that when Donna, I forgot why she goes back to the Palmer home, but she goes back to see Leland and she's wearing the glasses. Once again, something that was very much of Laura's. And he starts dancing with Donna, and it's in a way that she looks very clearly violated. And I think this is very important for after Leland's dead, but I think it's Truman that interrupts, and he tells Leland about, like, that there was a murder. And Donna figures it out, leading James to just, like, flee instantly. Yeah, well, like, when I said the what could possibly go wrong, given that the proposal was very short-lived, and also Donna was, like, nearly killed by Leland, like, in broad daylight with Sarah. I'm pretty sure Sarah was home at that point. Yeah, there's, again, that's another scene where there's a lot to unpack in terms of the serious danger between Maddie being killed and Leland's death.
I've always thought that Donna would have absolutely been Leland's next victim had he not been apprehended by that point, you know. It seems like that's exactly what was going to happen. The glasses and everything. I don't know, it's just so creepy the way that that's done. It's brilliant, but I find it really hard to watch.
One thing that is that I find a little bit unfathomable is that we have the 3 days later scene after Leland dies. And the thing is that this reception for Leland's funeral, the fact that it's at the Hayward home, this has to be weird for everyone involved. I guess it depends because it seems like the consensus, at least when I talk to people, is that once Leland is dead, it seems like the town at least knows well enough of like what really happened to Laura because, you know, there's Laura, there's Maddie's death. And clearly, very clearly in that episode, Cooper and Sarah know because he's explicitly talking about it. But even if the town doesn't know, like Donna, the fact that she was nearly like assaulted by Leland in one form or another, and they have to have his funeral at the Hayward home. I know that there's probably opinions on just the changing of the tone of Twin Peaks at this point. But this is such a strange thing for them to not bring up, because if anything, she just talks to Ed about James going away. There's nothing about the Palmers. There's nothing about Leland's weirdness. There's not reeling from Maddie's death. It's just like for me, like for Donna's character, like a window of missed opportunity.
It is, absolutely. And I suppose that I could rationalize it as a headcanon in that maybe she's feeling so upset about it that she's not going to address it, you know. That can certainly happen to some people, but I think that that was obviously an oversight that had happened in the writer's room. And yeah, I do wish that there had been more depth put into, you know, her inner machinations a bit more at this point, because like you say, that she just kind of ends up talking about, well, nothing really. And it's a bit of a letdown after those really great emotionally charged scenes.
I know that behind the scenes, this is when Kyle MacLachlan, I guess we should address that it was sort of at the behest of Laura Flynn Boyle that Kyle MacLachlan did not want to pursue the Audrey romance, because I think it was Harley Payne that said that they were banking on that romance for like the subsequent episodes after Leland's death. But when Kyle MacLachlan said no, like, well, we have these subplots, let's just stretch them out. And the best they give for Donna is that she's back in high school, and then Mike and Nadine, they have their subplot where Nadine's asking about checking out Mike Nelson, and then Mike's like, "You got to help me with this." And then that's not even going to the fact that she gets caught up at the tail end of the James and Evelyn story arc, which to me, these are like the most like egregiously unwatchable arcs of season two. So, and the thing is that Donna is, and this is more so for the Evelyn arc, but every time I watch that arc, I think of like, oh, good, Donna's here. They're gonna finally get away from it. And because there was the, I guess because the writers had nothing else at that point, they go back to the Marsh home. And every time, and I swear, every time I go watch, I just have myself, oh my God, are we really doing this again? Because they saved the worst for last for that arc. If people in 1991 shut off Twin Peaks for good, I this would be the episode I could understand because, God, like no one's heart was in it at this point. Certainly not with these arcs.
It's so funny you say that because the first time I watched, I really didn't like that plot at all. I thought it was a complete waste of time, But the more I've gone back, maybe I've just gone insane. I don't know. But I now like it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just broken, but I mean, it is objectively terrible, don't get me wrong, but I kind of love it because of how terrible it is.
I think for what I get, I know I mentioned my James Hurley episode, but as bad as the Evelyn Marsh arc is, I do think that it is James is one of the few characters who remains in character at that because, you know, he left Twin Peaks because he's reeling from the death of Laura, reeling from the death of Maddie. So he it seems like once again, even though this is not a good arc for anyone involved, at least the fact that he's stepping away is like, I was like, well, this feels like it's building off of everything while the rest of the town is ignoring it. But yeah, it's just kind of weird that Donna just shows up in these like random weird arcs for a while.
Yeah, she is completely out of place.
Yeah, to be fair, everyone else is, but I think there's just that one, once I had that realization about that they should have done more with her after Leland tried to assault her and it's just not addressed, I was like, I think that's just why I have a hang up about it.
No, I completely agree. And to be fair, my appreciation for the Evelyn and James arc isn't because of Donnie. It's I like Evelyn. I said it. That's controversial, but I do like her.
To be fair, I do like Annette McCarthy's performance in it. It's just that she wasn't given a really good role. It's like, I feel like if it was a one-off thing, I think it would have been okay at least, but it definitely should not have been five episodes. I'm pretty sure based off of screen time, I think Evelyn has 30 to 40 minutes of screen time. And to put it in perspective, that's not much shorter than Sarah Palmer in all three seasons of Fire Walk With Me.
Wow.
Yeah, oh, I'm not kidding. Oh, yeah, anyone who ever wants to look up the screen time for characters, you learn a lot from when you see how much or how little these characters are on screen.
Wow. That's a revelation for me.
Oh, yeah, everyone should check out like all the screen times because even characters like Margaret Lanterman, I think it's only like 15 or 20 minutes or something. But I mean, that could be a whole different rabbit hole. But I guess to get through the Evelyn Marsh arc as fast as possible, I think what makes this part so redundant and why it was so critical is five episodes is that James flees once again after she forgave him for his relationship with Evelyn. After this, the worst of Donna's arcs are over. And then it becomes actually quite good again because I think the next scene after that is that her, Audrey, and Shelley meet at the Roadhouse. And this is, of course, when everything involving Wyndham Earls starts to wind up. And, you know, Wyndham Earls watching close by. And then we even have that scene where Wyndham Earl, he poses as Gerald Craig as one of Doc Hayward's former roommates. And the fact that he shows up to the house is like so unsettling to me because Cooper, I forget when he says it relative to this episode, but he does talk about I think he says it to Truman when they the vagrant is dead at the sheriff station, but it's like if you want me dead, you have done it already. So the fact that he's showing up and the fact that Doc Hayward he comes back, and there's just something about Kenneth Welch's performance where he's so good that even when he's not on screen, you feel that presence with the way Doc Hayward's talking about this. And that's I believe that's around the point where Cooper, he gets Audrey, Shelley, and Donna all at the sheriff station to say, like, you need curfews, you need to report in every 12 hours. Yeah, it's like now that we're just getting into the Wyndham Earl stuff, did you have any thoughts about this relative to Donna or even Audrey and Shelley's relationship to it?
For me, that's like you said, it's when Twin Peaks gets really good again. And this is another thing. I wish that we had more of that trio, because I think that they were all fantastic together. We did have a little bit more, but it wasn't enough, I don't think. And I think that that's something that Twin Peaks did lack sometimes. You know, there wasn't maybe enough, especially like healthy female dynamics, you know, things like that. And that would have been really nice to see, especially because Donna had obviously lost her best friend, and then she could have had her half-sister as a bestie, maybe even Shelley, and that could have been really nice, you know. And I think that they're all really interesting characters too, so it's always a treat for me seeing my favorite characters together.
I agree that all three of them had a great dynamic, and I guess I can kind of see why they didn't quite congregate together, but we do at least get Audrey and Donna working alongside each other again, because, you know, during this, and because you feel the shadow of Wyndham Earle just cast over everyone, mostly Cooper, but you still feel over everyone for the most part. But this is where Donna starts to pick up about Ben Horn's newfound behavior. Even around that time, I remember when I did the Doc Hayward episode, I was mentioning how I thought Ben Horn's like good deeds were kind of hollow until Doc Hayward said he believes he's genuine. And then this is around the point where Audrey, she aids Donna at the Great Northern, where she even shows that little hiding, that little area where she can kind of pry into Ben Horn's office. And this all but confirms her weird relationship with Ben Horn. I know there's going to be a lot to talk about with Donna's parentage from this point on, but do you have any thoughts about anything relating from Donna working with her to her, I guess, uncovering another mystery about her family?
Yeah, I honestly really love that plot line, that whole dynamic. I think it's fantastic. I think it makes so much sense as well. Again, my only real gripe with it is that we didn't really get much more of it. It was kind of mentioned, and then it died with the rest of the show at that point. But of course, you know, I don't think anyone could predict what would happen with the show's cancellation and everything, so I don't blame anybody for that. It's just from a fan perspective, it would have been really nice had it been more developed. But I think even in the kind of bare bones look at it that we had, I think it was a really compelling plot line. And yeah, I think that those characters are just fantastic, and then working together, I loved every second of that. I really did. I thought it was fantastic.
I think one thing that's interesting is that Donna seems to be that she's the one in the right every step of the way, because she does directly question her parents about it, and they're evasive at every single turn. And also, she does find the birth certificate, and the fact that there's no father listed is another layer where I think she does like directly question. It's like literally right before Miss Twin Peaks, where she does say that she's like, she gives the ultimatum that if they're not going to tell her, that she's going to ask Ben Horn directly. I just think it's crazy because I think that once that happened, they needed to have that sit down conversation, that they needed to say something, because it makes me think of that scene. I believe it's in the Ozymandias episode of Breaking Bad, where Marie, and sorry, spoilers for anyone who's not watched Breaking Bad. It's in the episode where Hank dies and everything starts crumbling around for Walter White's family. And Marie, she says to Skyler, like, you need to tell your son about everything about what Walter and you are doing, or I will. And Skyler begrudgingly does the right thing. But like the Haywards, they don't do that at all. I think it fits in character with them, but at the same time, I have this hang up the fact that Ben Horn, of all people, was doing the right thing over the Haywards.
Yeah, I always find that something really difficult to reconcile with as well, especially because Will and Eileen, they always seemed like they were decent people. They seemed like decent parents, you know, they seemed to really try with their children. And then for them to just be so evasive and so cagey about it, and you know, that was fundamentally wrong, because you know, Donna deserved to know the truth, and it would have been better for her to hear it properly from her loved ones and not having to find that all out herself.
I don't think there's necessarily anything quote-unquote symbolic about this. I think it was just only the right time she could have done it, but it's the fact that Audrey Horn, she's on stage for Miss Twin Peaks, and that's the moment when Donna goes up to Ben Horn to ask his relationship. And to me, that all but confirmed it to Donna in that moment. I think that because of everything that happened at Miss Twin Peaks that night, where, you know, Donna's there, Doc Hayward's there, I don't know if the other Haywards are there, but the fact that Wyndham Earl struck and then like chaos just went awry for everyone involved because Annie Blackburn goes missing, Wyndham Earl shows up, Cooper goes in the Black Lodge, Doc Hayward, he's helping Nadine and Mike Nelson after severe head wounds on top of this contentious family interaction. So when Ben Horn shows up that night, and not only that, Sylvia shows up at that moment. And Donna, she has her bags packed up and ready to go at that point, which is going to be very critical for what I'm going to say afterwards. But that's the moment where she's saying, you're my father to Doc Hayward. Boy, what an awkward night for Donna to leave, because that's when she splits Ben Horn's head open. So there's a lot for Donna to deal with. We're winding down on the original series, but do you have any thoughts about this scene or anything about the original series at large leading up to this?
Yeah, so I think that scene, like you said, I think it is absolutely wonderful. And I think it speaks volumes too, because although Ben Horn has changed in many ways at this point, Donna's always going to see him as, this sleazy, corrupt arsehole, and her father fundamentally as a good person, because I do think he is, despite all of what had happened with her parentage and everything. And I think that the whole found family thing, I think it's very powerful. And we also see, as I'm sure you'll address later on, that she ended up working with Will Hayward again. And I think that that's really sweet, and I like that it kind of came round full circle.
Before we get to the final dossier, one thing that was crossing my mind as we were talking is that have you ever thought about what it would be like for the Haywards, or specifically Donna, if we had a 1991 season 3 on ABC?
Oh, actually, of all, like, I've written so many things, but I've never really thought about a season three. But I suppose, I mean, in my ideal world, they'd reconcile and talk about things, but I guess for television drama, that probably wouldn't happen, and something would happen, right?
Because I was starting to think that that maybe Donna would have just been written off the show in general at that point, because I think there's something about the bags being packed and just how, I mean, saying contentious is just an understatement at this point. But there's also, I've heard conflicting things. Like, I think Bob Engels and Harley Payne, there's been debates about if there'd be a 5 to 10 year time jump between those seasons, or even the middle of season 2 after Leland's death. So I think that gap would also just be a factor that would be worth addressing. But I think that, I mean, I don't want to get too far behind the scenes, but with Laura Flynn Boyle, where she wanted to be more of an Audrey Horne type, or she was a major catalyst for the Audrey and Cooper romance not going. And to be fair, I will say this, I do like the fact that Cooper and Audrey never went anywhere, because I think that when Cooper says that, you're a high school girl, I am a part of the Federal Bureau investigation, that he takes that oath very seriously. And to me, that feels much more in character. But I can just see where it's like with Laura Flynn Boyle, you see like with like subsequent roles like Wayne's World, where I think that for her, Twin Peaks was I don't want to say it was a stepping stone, because I do think she was genuinely good in it, but I think that her priorities were a little bit different. I think the fact she was not in Fire Walk Me kind of reaffirms that. But I think that she would have been written off, but the collateral damage of the Haywards still would have been prominent.
Yeah, no, actually, that would make a lot of sense. Yeah, I could definitely see that having happened.
And to go on to the final dossier, I know that you were mentioned before, and I do agree that she does get to work with Doc Hayward much later in her life. But I have to mention the caveat at the beginning, because Tammy Preston, she says that Donna moved to New York City in 1992 at the age of 18. Now, maybe you could say that she just wrote the wrong age or something, but I think the fact that she gets the age so egregiously wrong that I think it's worth addressing. Like, do you ever have any problems of, like, I guess the unreliable narrator, if you will, during this segment of the final dossier?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest, if I was going to be writing what I envision Donna's future to be, it probably wouldn't be most of, if anything, that was really written in the final dossier. But I do respect the canon. But yeah, I do find that really hard to believe. I also find it hard to believe that she would have moved to New York, of all places. Like, I don't know, at 18, I'm just. That sounds kind of weird to me, but I don't know, maybe.
I think that like the age is so wrong that I do have to question it, because there's a lot of stuff. Like Tammy even says she reaches out to Donna, but she does not want to discuss like anything in her letters to Audrey, because in the final dossier, Tammy does write down that she has not talked to her parents. If we're going with that mindset, probably not since the season two finale. She does talk to Harry and Gersten, though. Let's see, her modeling career skyrocketed throughout the 90s. And I think at this point, Mark Frost was just more inspired by Laura Flynn Boyle's career at that point. I don't know how severe the drugs were. I've never looked that far into Laura Flynn Boyle's career from the 2000s onward. Tammy does talk about her dating prominent boyfriends or dates. She married a man 2 times her age, which might have just been like a little, I don't know if passive aggressive is the right word, but I think Laura Flynn Boyle was dating Jack Nicholson at one point, who was older than her by like at least 30 years, probably even closer to 40. But yeah, not long after that, she encountered Lana, of all people. And Lana's a little bit of a rabbit hole in of itself, because Mark Frost, he felt compelled to put her that she was an assassin. I think he implied that she dated Trump for a while. Yeah, this is real, by the way. I'm not making this up. I'm pretty sure that this is in the Lana part of the final dossier. So once again, that's another rabbit hole I don't know if I necessarily want to touch. But it is worth mentioning that she does talk to Lana. And I remember, I actually wrote this down about the encounter, is that if it had anything to do with like the owl cave ring, and also if it had to do with anything about Lana being the winner of Miss Twin Peaks. And these were just shower thoughts I had down, but like I said, there's so much about the Lana stuff that I think just warrants its own episode. And if I'm to be totally honest, I don't really like that segment in general.
Me neither.
Oh, okay. I'm glad. Yeah, because I always like to be positive, but also honest whenever I do po the episodes. But I just got to be honest. Like the whole thing with Lana in the final dossier just did not land for me. But I guess to shift back to Donna, though, is that she would be in and out of rehab over the course of 5 years. And during the last one, she was missing for 2 days and was found in a crack house, like on like the east side of like New York City. And this was set off by the death of her mother, who died in 2009, and Donna didn't talk to for at least 17 to 20 years. Like, again, it comes back to the whole idea of like if she talked to her after the season two finale. But I think the fact that she didn't bury the hatchet with her was something that really upset her greatly. So then her and her husband, they got divorced. And when she started getting sober, she moved to Connecticut for a 12-step program. She would actually reach out to her father and would even move to Vermont to become his assistant at his practice. And at least according to Tammy in the final dossier, that she was still active in the 12-step program in Vermont. And I know I mentioned before, but even though Ta she declined talking to Tammy under any real circumstances, that Tammy did find out that she was becoming a nurse practitioner. So again, there's a lot that you have to take with a grain of salt with the final dossier, not just this, but but everything that we read in it. But I will say is that the stuff they say about Doc Hayward seems to line up pretty well, at least in that. And then Gersten, that also adds up pretty well as well. So I just figured it was worth addressing.
No, I agree. And I'm quite biased because I do like that resolution. So I'm more than happy to accept that and take that on board. I do think that that kind of thing would make a lot of sense for her. I think she's an inherently very caring person. I could absolutely see her in a nurse type role, and I think that that would be really awesome. And for her to have maybe not had an easy start in life, but she's finding her true vocation later on in life. I think that's really great, reconciling with her father, I think that that's probably the best happy ending we could have, really, for her.
And I do have one last thing. I guess it kind of bookends what I was saying with the first question on here, is that the only thing I have for the return is that when we see Sarah at the Palmer home, we do see all these pictures of Laura from yesteryear, but one of which is her with Donna, with the Laura Flynn Boyle Donna. Maybe this is like very negligible after all we talked about, but do you ever think about that photo and the fact that Laura Flynn Boyle was in it?
Yeah, I did wonder about that because I believe that Laura was asked to be in season three, but she declined. I don't think Moira was asked. So I guess that maybe everyone behind Twin Peaks views her as a definitive donor. I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to speak on behalf for anybody, just my thought there. But yeah, I do wonder about that. And I also find it kind of interesting as well that they would even have that picture in their house, because I don't know about you, but growing up, I don't remember my friends' parents ever having pictures of me and my friends together in their house. I don't know, but that seems kind of strange thing to me.
I mean, I don't want to get too dark, but I know people that have that deceased children, and they there's that part of them where like their lives do not move on, where it's like you look at the Palmer home and I think of Laura's homecoming photo where you look at how washed out it is. And if there's one scene that makes me, when I watch the turn, realize how 25 years truly does go by, it take, you know, how long the time that is, it was that scene. But I think that when I look at the Laura Flynn Boyle photo, because it's just there very passively. But I do think that to me, it does reaffirm that Maura Kelly was like Laura's Donna, and how she viewed her as this like very altruistic, pure person, and that the Laura Flynn Boyle is the quote unquote real Donna. And, you know, it's like we talked about how clothing, how it sets people off, and how, in my opinion, it seemed like your opinion as well, that the clothing changed her. So, yeah, I think that's it I have for Donna. But do you have anything you want to say before we ended today's episode?
Yeah, I think that really I just wanted to say as well that I absolutely find her to be, you know, maybe one of the most human and most relatable characters. I think probably because I watched from such a young age. I was 16 myself when I first watched. So, you know, I could definitely see myself, I think, in her in many respects. But also that I think that that underlying melancholy that she has is, I don't know, to me that again is something that is so emblematic of Twin Peaks. You know, it is a very sad story at its core. And maybe sometimes that can be forgotten because there's so many mysteries and delightful things happening, but it is a sad story. And I think that her reactions were overall very realistic. They weren't always nice, but, you know, realism isn't always nice, is it? So I think that it would be cool as well if people maybe gave her character another look. She's often kind of dismissed as being a bit whiny, a bit overly sensitive, but I don't know. I think that all of that was pretty understandable given the circumstances. But yeah, I love Donna. I love both portrayals. I think that she's absolutely terrific. And I'm so grateful to have had, you know, all this time to talk about her.
And I just want to thank you for coming on as well. And I know I say it's the end of every episode, but was there anything you want to plug in terms of links you have or social media people can find you on?
Well, I don't really have a whole lot of stuff to plug, I'm afraid, but I will comment on the post. So if anybody wants to add me on social media, feel free to. On my Facebook, that's really the only social media I primarily use. I do have a website and you can see my Twin Peaks collectibles on there, along with other stuff as well. I like lots and lots of things. So, you know, if you're interested, then I would be happy to send you the link to that. And thank you so much for listening to me go on for all this time. I'm not the best orator, but I've had so much fun and I love this podcast and it's such an honor to be on here.
And yeah, I can, of course, put all your links in the show notes once it's all set up. But no, I just want to thank you for coming on, because I know that Donna is not a fan favorite, depending on who you ask. And even like certain Donnas people feel strongly about. So
yes.
I thought it was like, you know, it was really great to be able to talk about, I guess, quote unquote, both Donnas, and to just like see like the positives of the of what she brought to the original series.
Yeah, I've been so happy to do that, you know, because, like I said, she's really always been one of my absolute favorites. Maybe I'm crazy, but hey, that's just me.
Together.